Okay, now I'd like to open it to some Q&A. Yeah.
Because I know people who have a very volatile style, but they're not aggressive. And other people who are passive or avoidant can be very critical and contemptuous.
Yeah. And that's why it's often difficult to tell by the behavior what's going on inside the person. Because like you said, somebody can be very volatile, but they're not coming from a critical space or a really harsh, destructive space. And there can be somebody who is totally passive in a conflict, but their mind is really spinning around with a lot of malicious thoughts.
So it's really important to know the difference between the specific tactic you use in the situation and then the style, maybe cultural or
just
whatever.
Yeah, the style can be cultural, you know. The motivation is, the other person's motivation is unknown to us. We're just seeing the external behavior. And to be aware that other people are only seeing our external behavior. They have no idea what's going on inside of us if we don't tell them. Yeah. And I think this is one thing that happens in conflicts, especially in families, is we expect the other people to be able to read our mind. Yeah. I'm silent and not communicating. You're supposed to know that I'm unhappy and come over and comfort me. But I don't say anything. I just sit there and pout or, you know, or withdraw. And I expect you to know what's going on inside of me and fix it. This happens in families, doesn't it? Yeah? Exactly. Communication's really the key. And, you know, sometimes people have very different communication styles. And I was talking to one friend of mine, and he was, no, she was telling me that in her marriage, what was it? One was their relationship with her husband, and one was a relationship with a very good friend. And she was the kind of person who always liked to know beforehand kind of what the plan was, and what people were doing and what the plan was. And I can really identify with that because I'm like that too, you know. Just let me know what's going to happen and I'll be okay. Well, her husband didn't bother to communicate what the plan was and would pop things on her at the last moment and expect her to go along with it. And, you know, and then she said she had another friend who also thought that the communicating the plan was very important. So they would communicate back and forth about the plan so they each knew what each other was doing. So, you know, she was kind of commenting how different the relationships could be just by that factor of how you communicate, you know? And, I mean, I know I'm the same way. If I hear about something at the last minute, I feel left out, I feel disoriented, you know. Just if you tell me in advance, I'll probably be okay with it, yeah? But then some people, for whatever reason, because I'm not one of them, they just don't think to tell you in advance, yeah? And I don't think, you know, some people maybe keep information for a particular reason, but I think some people, it's not even with a particular reason. They're not nothing malicious. They just don't think to you know, tell other people. So, you know, but this can be a real sore point in a family, can't it? Yeah? And it's something that could actually be remedied, you know, without too much problem, if people were able to communicate about it. Yeah?
When you were speaking, it made me think of a situation with a family member and a very good friend, both
misunderstood. So you're talking about two people who have the same, similar behavior.
Yes.
And you're wondering what to do with both of them. when you're feeling that they're both telling you what you want to hear, but nothing much is happening. Maybe you need to say that to them. You know, just say, I observe, you know, we had this discussion, and this is what you said, do you remember it in the same way? This is what you said to me, and this is what I've observed happening afterwards, and what you said and what's happened afterwards somehow haven't corresponded, and I'm confused, you know, what's the story? I'm sorry, I'll change in the future. And then the same thing happens.
Exactly.
Yeah, then, you know, maybe that relationship becomes less important to you because, you know, it doesn't seem to, you know, but I would try really trying to talk with that person about, you know, say, do you see that we're in a habit, you know? Or is it only me thinking that we're in a habit? Do you see that we're in a habit also? Because maybe they don't see it at all. And maybe they think they are doing what they said they're going to do. Okay? So maybe try just discussing that first. And, you know, and something may come out of it and something may not. You don't know. Yeah. And that's a hard thing, especially I think with our parents where the pattern has, you know, as the older we get, the more entrenched our patterns become. You know? And people can always change. I mean, we have the Buddha nature, possibility for change always exists, you know, but it becomes a little bit harder when people are older. And so sometimes, okay, that's, you know, I would prefer if I could remake them into my version of what I want them to be, but like you said, you finally got it. This is what he is. He's content with it. He's content with it. He doesn't see any problem with it. So then there has to be some adjusting on everybody else's part.
That happened with me, and then my father started to get Alzheimer's.
You're talking about a situation where somebody doesn't see their behavior as a problem at all. But you see something like they're smoking as a problem, and, you know, it affects them, and it affects you because you're close to them, and if they get sick, it's going to affect your life. Yet, for them, they don't want to even hear about a conflict because they love to smoke, and they have no intention of stopping smoking. And then your basic alternative is let go. Because if you keep harping, it's going to start a whole other conflict, you know? And sometimes, I mean, this is the hardest thing. I've seen it with, I mean, I have situations with people I know and care about too. And especially, what's especially hard is when their behavior at the end is going to affect me. Yeah? Like if somebody you care about gets lung cancer, then, you know, it affects you. And you can try and explain it to the other person. You know, you may feel that this is just your life and your decision, but if you get very ill, it's going to affect me also. And I care about you, and I'd like you to live long, and, you know, I want you to see the grandchildren or whatever it is, you know. Give them some positive incentives. If you just meet with a flat, no, I have no intention of doing this, then at some point you just have to let go. I don't know any good resolution because other than to keep the door open in the hopes that sometime they'll realize the negative nature of what they're doing. And if what they're doing is so intolerable that you just can't stand their smoking, then maybe you have to live somewhere else or, you know, yeah, but I mean, we cannot control other people. And it's tough. I mean, haven't we all experienced that? Where, you know, you kind of give somebody some good advice and something they really need to do and you can see the harm they're doing. And, you know, if you're lucky, they'll say, I do have a problem. You know, but I have a problem, but it's really hard for me to change. You know, if you're unlucky, they'll say, this is none of your business, and it's not a problem. I have a friend who's a doctor, and he deals with this all the time. You know, people are coming in and with a complaint about their illness. It's a lifestyle thing, and if they stopped doing something or started doing something else, it would really affect their health concern. They don't do it. They come back to him 3 months later, 6 months later with the same physical complaint. They haven't taken his advice at all, and they're asking him to treat him again. And he has to deal with this as a doctor, you know? And he said the same thing. Sometimes it takes somebody going into the hospital and having a total crisis before they get it, you know? And sometimes, you know, that's what it takes. I think what's useful, you know, because we can sit and get really frustrated over this kind of thing, but have you ever noticed that we're never like that? Have you noticed that none of the people who are stubborn about their problems ever show up in retreats? It's always the people who are so concerned and want to help other people with their problems that come to the retreats. But none of us ever behave like that, do we? Yeah? So it might be a little bit interesting to flip the situation and see if there's something that a family member has been telling us that we just block out or refuse to listen to or throw back in their face. Mm-hmm. Okay, so a situation where, you know, the woman's husband died 20 years ago from smoking. She's feeling ill because of the secondhand effect of the smoke, but she's more unhappy because she continues to blame him for making her sick even though he's been dead for 20 years. And she probably has no intention of giving up blaming him. And I think what you have to do is get her to see how miserable that thought makes her. You know? And to help her see that she has abdicated her own power. By blaming him, she has given him all the power. And since he's dead, there's nothing he can do about it, you know? But that her power in the situation, if she wants to feel better, is to take her own power, have her own confidence, and change the way her mind is thinking about the situation. But she, you know, has to have some willingness to do that. Yeah. Which who knows if she has or not. But sometimes if you can help somebody see, you know, how much that thought makes you suffer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can see this especially in situations of divorce or whatever. Somebody develops a thought about the other person and they just go over it and over it again and again and again and again, and they get more and more and more miserable. Yeah? Blaming the other person. I'm unhappy because you did this and this. Well, you know, maybe I'm unhappy because I'm thinking like this. Maybe I'm unhappy because I'm stuck in the thought of blaming you.
She didn't know it.
No, I gathered that.
Yeah. Like you said last night, she built a court case.
Yeah.
And everything is a court case.
Yeah. Right. And she won the court case, except right. She couldn't imprison the prisoner.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, she has to see the mechanisms herself. Yeah. Yep. Yep, resentment and grudge holding, just, they make us tremendously unhappy. You know, so unhappy. And we feel the whole time we're filled with resentment that it's the other person's fault. Yeah? And they may have done this, that, or the other thing, but when we think about it over and over and over again and build our court case and hold on to our resentment, whatever they did once, we're doing again and again to ourselves. And it is very, very toxic. And I think what's helpful there, I mean, first just to realize that the situation is not happening right now and that what we're holding on with so much resentment is not happening right now, that it's only happening in our mind, and that terrible resentment is is a creation of our own mind. Now, and meditation can really help us see that. And then I think being able to have some compassion for the other person who is stuck in whatever they're stuck in. Yeah? And you know, we can say, well, they're stuck in all this self-destructive behavior. But aren't we stuck in self-destructive behavior also? I mean, we're spinning around in our ignorance, anger, and attachment that's keeping us imprisoned in cyclic existence lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. That's pretty self-destructive behavior, isn't it? Yeah? And the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas keep telling us what to do and keep giving us the teachings. And, you know, we come to courses and listen to the teachings and then we go out and we do the same old thing. We get attached all over again. We get angry all over again. We get jealous all over again. We come back and the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas give us the same teaching again and we go do the same stupid thing. So, you know, when we see this and we can look at ourselves with a little bit of humor and also with some compassion. You know, look at me, because I am trying. I mean, I try when I come to courses, I am trying. And it's hard, you know, and I have to have some compassion for myself and some patience for myself. Because I'm going to be like a two-year-old who's trying to walk and stands up and falls down, and that's going to happen for a while. So let's have some gentleness with myself. And similarly, here's the other person, they're doing the same thing, just like me. You know, and can I have some gentleness and compassion for them and how hard it is for them to change? I think it's better to be real careful before you get married and have kids. I think prevention is, you know, much wiser. If you weren't careful or whatever, you know, and there's kids involved. Because I've heard the same thing and I've talked to several people who as adults, you know, I ask them, you know, what was it like? And some people say, well, I'm glad they stuck together in spite of the conflict. And other people say, I wish they had gotten divorced because I couldn't stand the fighting. And other people say, I'm so glad they got divorced. Because I didn't have to listen to the fighting, and other people said they got divorced and I became a pawn between the two of them. There's no one clear, easy answer, you know? And I think it, again, depends on good communication with the parents, which is often difficult because that's the precise reason they got divorced, is because they couldn't communicate so well. Sometimes, though, you know, once they're separate, the ability to communicate comes back a little bit for the sake of the kids. But I don't think there's, you know, one size fits all in the case of, you know, a marriage that's run into problems. So I think that best thing to do is not rush into marriage. You know, make sure, that's why I was talking yesterday about how harmful this romantic notion of love can be. And if people are a bit more realistic, then, you know, and don't have such big expectations out of marriage, then it can become easier to live with the other person and accept them. I think people should really consider wisely before having kids, you know, and check one's own motivation for having them. And then if marriages run into difficulties, see if you can go talk to a third party, you know, and suggest either a counselor or a mediator or whatever. I know that can be difficult because sometimes you suggest it and the other person says, no, I don't want to go. What can you do? You know? This is samsara, folks. And, you know, the conclusion I've come to in many of these things, where there is no one perfect answer, there is no one situation that's going to bring us everlasting happiness, there is no karma-free action, is to really reflect that this is the nature of samsara and this is precisely why we need to get out of it. Yeah, and why we need to put our energy into, you know, the renouncing cyclic existence and aspiring for liberation, put our energy into developing the altruistic intention for enlightenment, put our energy into generating the wisdom, realizing emptiness. Because doing that is going to bring us some kind of lasting good result. But, you know, trying over and over and over again to make our samsara better. I mean, we can improve our samsara a little bit, but trying to find, you know, think samsara is going to be nirvana, it's not. Yeah.
Box of chocolate, you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're getting until you're in there.
So. Yeah. Very much. We don't know what we're getting. We don't. I mean, we're a mystery to ourselves, aren't we? Yeah. So how can we expect that we're, you know, going to understand the other person 100% when we're a mystery to ourselves?
Can we blame the hormone?
You can blame anything you want to, but then see if it makes you happy. I think this in some way is one of our big escapes, is in our refusal to look at how our own mind causes our suffering. We blame our genes, we blame our hormones, we blame serotonin and dopamine, you know? It's always anything else but taking responsibility for how I think and how I feel. Yeah. Now we can look at all of our problems from that viewpoint, but is that going to solve them and make us happy? You know? Do we really think science is going to come up with the perfect pill that's going to make us all blissed out? I mean, the scientists can't even make themselves happy. How are they going to make us happy? With all due respect, I mean, science has something to offer. I'm not knocking its value. It definitely has something to offer. But what I'm talking about is our mind thinking that there's going to be an external solution because we think the problems are external. You know, and this is, I mean, we're coming back to the Four Noble Truths here. Second Noble Truth is the cause of suffering is in this mind, you know, my own ignorance, my own attachment, resentment, and jealousy, and arrogance, and anger. That's the cause of the suffering. And until we really accept that, you know, on a gut level, it's we're not going to get out of cyclic existence. Okay? And sometimes we can accept it and, you know, realize we need to change our mind, and we do. But then we're so habituated with it's somebody else's fault, or my genes' fault, my hormones' fault, my serotonin's fault. You know, my parents' fault, my somebody, you know, my dog's fault. Yeah. It's the weather's fault. It's something else, you know. It's not me. I'm just this innocent victim. Poor me, you know. I'm so sweet, always cooperative, always kind, always communicate well. I'm this wonderful person who just wants to be happy and make the whole world happy. And look how awful this world is, you know, to me especially. Yeah? And, I mean, you can see I'm very familiar with this script. I've practiced it well, you know, from beginningless time into this life. I know it very well. And it leads us into a dead end, you know? Let's sit quietly for a few minutes, do some meditation.